Amazingly, we're in the same room.
Yeah.
At the same time, we haven't had to ask anybody for this to happen. It just worked out on this one day that our shifts, the stars have aligned.
I know. We've got the one match off together.
But the thing is, we're recording that. What day is it? I do with night shifts get a little bit. I know it's bin day, so it's got to be Wednesday. And we're doing this in the gap when Daniil Medvedev is on.
Yes.
And the danger is he can go through his opponents quite quickly. So we do have the live scores in front of us because we're both on the match for separate people after Medvedev. So this is either going to be a normal length podcast or quite a short one.
Yeah, if it just ends.
He's
already a breakup, so and they've played one game.
Well, if it just ends because we're together, it means you've run out of batteries.
No!
Again!
No, full battery, ready to go.
We've got lights, yeah. We've got batteries, we've got Indian Wells.
We have. Indian Wells off and running. Well, we're quite far into it now. It's, been quite...
Is it day seven? Day seven?
Oh, I'm not sure. It's a long one.
Our women's predictions are out.
Yeah, it didn't go well. But, I mean, to be fair, that was always going to happen.
Well, did you go Medvedev? No, you didn't.
For the I men's. Did, yeah.
Did you? Oh, no, right, okay. So yeah, we played it safe. And your woman's... Was it Muguruza? I was thinking about
this. No, it was Sakkari in the end.
Oh. Yeah. So I was sending you all these gloaty messages when Muguruza lost, going, she's out. And you're going, yeah.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even your player. Okay.
Yeah. It's,
and I had Andreescu.
Yes, you did.
There's been a lot of shocks. I'm wondering, is it tiredness on some counts? Because we've just done a match with Casper Ruud, who looks toast. He's played over 60 matches this year. He's got 5 titles. And normally we get to this year. Look, this is normally at the other end of the Masters, when people are fresh and they're having fun and they play doubles and they just want to play tennis. Now, you've got players almost crawling on their hands and knees. They're so tired.
Yeah, I mean, it is something that happens a lot, isn't it? And when we see the sort of the back end of the season, pretty much post US Open. Look, I think that's one of the reasons why the US Open throws up different winners more than the other slams. It's just that it starts to become tough, a little bit difficult. So, it is a hard part of the season for a lot of players. We don't get a huge amount of off season, and people really do sort of hit the beginning of the year hard. And keep going, and you've got the move to the clay, to the grass, to the US Open series, and it does feel
like...
And now
we've got bubbles, haven't we?
Yeah.
We've got the sort of... And Diego Schwartzman was talking about this after the match that we've just watched when he beat Casper Ruud, and they talked about how difficult it's been. And it just adds... I mean, some players don't go home because they can't go home and either cost too much at a lower level to get back and do all the tests, or it's just not worth it. Like the players from Australia, when you finally go home, you're locked in a hotel room for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's really tough. There are so many challenges. Even on normal years, it's a long season, it's a tough one, lots of travel, and definitely we start to see players, particularly the top players. I think it's those top teners, you know, they've picked up a lot of points. They would have won, if you're in the top 10, you would have won a lot of matches through the year. That's just sort of how it goes. Like you say, somebody like Casper Ruud, no one's done more winning than him. And it is just really tough to sustain that. He did look a little bit toast. And Indian Wells, you know, the courts are really, really slow. It's very, very hard on the body. So that really does take its toll. And a couple of others actually doing pretty well. I'm quite excited to see if Hubert Hurkacz can do the reverse sunshine double with 6 months off in between. It's not quite the sunshine double, because the point of the sunshine double is that you maintain it essentially for 4 weeks, don't you? Because you play them back to back, and that's so impressive, and it's very rarely done, and all of that. So he's still going for the sunshine double because he won Miami ages ago. I feel like we should still give it to him if he wins it.
The upside down, back to front, will probably never happen like this again, sunshine double.
Yeah, I mean, if there was ever an asterisk, it's here, isn't it?
Oh, right. Okay. I'm not going to say that word because I always comes out like a comic character, doesn't it? I'm not going to say it. But, yeah. But would there be? I mean, it's still similar conditions. It's still, he's got to do the two. But what you're saying, it's just because there's been... But he's played a lot. Not like he hasn't done anything between them.
No, of course. I mean, he's been fantastic. But it's just, it's not the sunshine double as we know it. I mean, the point of the sunshine double is the back-to-back nature of those two events. So, I think we'll still give it to him. I'm just mentioning, that's all.
I was leaving for work the other night because we're working remotely, so we're working through the night. And I was saying goodbye and goodnight to the twins, you know, say goodnight. And one of them said to me, "Mummy, do you have to go to work?" And I said, "Yeah, I've got to work." He said, I don't want you to work. I want you to stay here." And I said, "Well, Mummy's got to work." Why have you got to work, Mummy? And I said, "Well, you know, I've got to pay for things. You've got to pay for the house, pay for the..." And I said, and he was still going, "You don't need to work." And I said, "You know, like the football club and all the..." He said, "Yes, Mummy." And I said, "Well, I work to pay for those." And then he said, "Have a good day at work, Mummy."
Yeah, exactly. Great. Thanks very much.
It was, and then he asked me again the other day, having forgotten. I said, "Well, remember, it pays for all the clubs and the activities." He said, "Yes, you keep working, Mummy."
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, why aren't you at work? Why are you at home?
What are you
bumming
doing
about?
Here? Is there something not taking place that you could be working on?
Yeah,
maybe that'll be in a few years' time. So, I've had my orders.
There you go.
Just going to keep night or day. Whatever it is, I'm just going to keep going.
Well, the good thing is, working in tennis, it tends to be fairly relentless.
Yeah, it is. So. Even the off-season, there are exhibitions that pop up. There is always something. I was having a conversation we had on the pod a few weeks ago. I got everything blends into one by this stage of the season, about if the season stopped now, who would your WTA Player of the Year be? I know it was if it stopped now, and I went for Krejcikova and you went for Barty.
Yep.
And then we just kind of fleshed it out a little bit. I got a bit of abuse from Barty fans, and again, it was nothing against Barty. But we moved it on a bit, and you said, "Well, hang on a second. If Krejcikova would win US Open or Indian Wells, blah, 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 maybe she'd get the nod." So I was having the conversation before Krejcikova lost, was it yesterday or the day before, with Lucy Arl, who I'm commentating with on ATP Tennis Radio. And I was telling her about the conversation we had. And I said, "You know, it's really swinging between Barty and Krejcikova. And I'm still wondering who it should go to." And she went, "Raducanu." And I'd totally forgotten. It's amazing, isn't it? It just, I don't know whether it's because it is still so surreal, that fortnight or the 3 weeks for qualifying. But she said, "What about Emma Raducanu?" And I'm thinking, yes, we've never seen anything like it. So does that usurp everything the other players have done over the course of the year? And if she doesn't win another match for the rest of the year, is she Player of the Year?
No, absolutely not.
But why not?
No way!
You have said, as I have said, we have never seen anything like that probably in sport being done.
Yeah.
Therefore, why would she not be your Player of the Year?
Because it's not about that. Player is
it
the
is
best
about
player
that.
All year.
But is it?
2021.
No, it's player yes, of, it is. Who was the player of 2021? It's Emma Raducanu, because she did something that no one's ever done before, and we still can't believe she did.
No, it's not.
It is.
She's not even a top 10 player.
But it doesn't have to be a top 10 player.
Why?
Because she's done something that no one else has ever done. It's exceptional.
Well, and well done to her. Look, I'm a massive Raducanu fan, as everybody will know. But no, does it qualify you for Player of the Year? Absolutely not.
Oh,
just because it's impressive.
Can't believe that. She's been to the Met Gala. She met the Duchess of Cambridge.
None of this is evidence.
And she played incredible tennis and didn't drop a set. So we talk about in the UK, BBC Sports Personality of the Year, and everyone's saying, despite it being Olympics and Paralympics, scrap it all, she wins. So if she's
if she's
nailed on for that, why is she not for Player of the Year when she's done something exceptional?
Because it's different, because A, that's personality.
Am
it's
I winning
about
year round?
Popularity, absolutely not. No, not a chance. Nowhere near. I think it's a ludicrous suggestion. Absolutely not. Player of the Year, being a tennis... The thing is, we've had this conversation about Emma in that she's not been a tennis player.
But she is a tennis player.
No,
she
won the US
champion.
Open, but she's not been a tennis player on tour at all. You can't be the best WTA Player of the Year when you haven't been on the WTA.
But surely you can if you've done something as exceptional as she did.
Well, you could if everybody else lost everything else, but they haven't. Barty's had a phenomenal year. Krejcikova has broken through and backed it up. Okay, it wasn't quite as extraordinary as Emma winning the US Open, but she won the French Open and has backed it up since. No, I think this is absolute madness. I mean, look, maybe she'll win it at one point.
You're pointing at me now.
No.
Normally we're not...
Yeah, I'm irritated now.
I can't believe that irritates you, though, because... It cannot be explained how she did something as exceptional. If someone said to me, actually more than one person have said to me, we've never seen anything like that in sport.
Yep.
I'm not
I'd
just
agree.
Talking about, So you'd
I'd agree.
You'd agree.
There's nothing else that compares to it.
So how does she therefore not qualify for being Player of the Year? Because if you ask for people's standout moment of 2021, a lot of people, a large majority, maybe even your good self, are going to say Emma Raducanu winning the US Open without dropping a set and coming from nowhere and being 150 in the world.
Yeah, it's a great moment. It's not a great year, though, is it? Moment of the year, wins hands down.
Newcomer of the year.
Tournament of the year, wins hands down. Newcomer of the year, which she wins every single category, but player of the year, no, not for me.
Well, I'd love the people listening to get involved in this because...
Because otherwise we're going to fall out. So, for the first time in tennis history...
I'm getting the look from Naomi that I don't want. So, people get in touch. Let us know. You can find us individually, collectively on social media. I'm going to do a little poll on social media. Let's just find out...
Oh, cool.
I find that incredible. Anyway, we will find out who does win it at some point. We've still got the WTA finals in Guadalajara. It's more and more people, but Leila Fernandez, I think, is the latest person saying, I think she's going to be there. Because again, these people are tired. There's been a lot. So Bianca Andreescu has already come out of that. Andy Murray recently said that he won't be part of the Davis Cup team for Great Britain. He said he doesn't feel he deserves to be part of the team like that, but also in terms of he hasn't been that good on his body in terms of preparation, spending time with his family before going to Australia. So it's just getting, as you touched on there, there's an awful lot. Emma Raducanu had an outside shot at making it. She lost in her first match at Indian Wells to Alexandra Sasnovich, that went on to back it up against Simona Halep. Was it a surprise to you? How do you feel Emma Raducanu played when she's been in Indian Wells?
I mean, it wasn't great, was it? It was a little bit flat from Emma. It wasn't the same level that we saw at the US Open. But, you know, that's it, isn't it? That's what she hasn't done. You know, ride out the ups and downs and life on tour. Sasnovich, I mean, she's ranked 100, which is a bit of nonsense, isn't it? I mean, it's Sasnovich. She's so much better than that. It's sort of surprising. So it's not like she's lost to somebody ranked 100. And as you say, Sasnovich beat Halep. You know, she's a real quality tour player. Mm. And there's a lot of experience that Emma, you know, still needs to pick up. Or maybe she doesn't. Maybe she can stop today. I mean, it doesn't really matter. I mean, does she have to back it up? I don't know. Like,
if she wins Player of the Year, she might stop. Done it all.
Yeah.
Player of the Year, US Open champion. I've got to do something else. But it must be, I think, as cool, calm and collected as she was through that run, which in itself was astonishing, and look, you knew her a lot better and her temper and her personality, just that how her life changed in that short space of time. It wasn't even a build-up. It was literally, she won it overnight, bang, in terms of millions of followers everywhere, all this stuff going. It must be very hard, as focused as you are as a human being, not to be distracted by what's taking place around you. That's something completely different that you've ever known.
It's bonkers. Mm. It's literally like you've just been picked up out of your life and just plonked in somebody else's.
It is, isn't it?
It's absolute insanity. I don't know how you ever learn to deal with that or cope with it, let alone get used to it in the space of a couple of weeks. No way. It's going to take a long time, really, for it to sink in and settle, if there is any sort of coping with it. I mean, I've always sort of, over the last few weeks, I've found myself saying a lot, look, if anyone can deal with it, Emma can.
Yeah, yeah.
But can anyone deal with it? I don't know. I mean, Osaka clearly struggles with a large part of what comes with the job. She would love it to just be about the tennis. But, it's not. It does come with more than that. And, the level that Emma's going to be operating at will be very similar to that. So we shall see.
You sort of think that maybe this is wrong, maybe you'll disagree. I think you might. But sooner rather than later, she needs to settle on a coach, because there'll continue to be the speculation. Lists will continue to grow. Bookies will probably have odds, and Andy Murray will be in there as her next coach. And you just feel the sooner she can, because she had a completely different team with her than was with her in the US Open, sort of from top to bottom. So you feel, and again, I might be wrong here, but looking from the outside, that the sooner she can get a settled team and almost go into her bubble. So she's got those people, they've been selected, they get on, they spent some time together, maybe had a trial period, but sooner they can just be in their bubble and go somewhere and get on with it. At the moment, it's not that she's exposed or out there or vulnerable, but you just feel how many people, Ash Barty talks about we team, she never talks about I. It's all about the team. Just if she can build, doesn't have to be a massive team, but a good team around her, I don't know, I just feel she can then sort of, maybe never quietly again in her life, but just get on with preparing for what's to come.
Yes, but it's her choice, isn't it? Because, yeah. You know, it's not like her last coach put a foot wrong and that was clearly successful, but she didn't want to continue that. So, you know, it's sort of weird to see, you know, she's won a Grand Slam, but then things are so uncertain and she seems quite unsettled afterwards because, you've got all of that off-court stuff to deal with a massive change. You might want to at least keep the on-court stuff fairly stable. But, you know, look, it's her choice to be in the situation hunting for another coach. So, I mean, I don't think we're going to see anything really announced until later in the year. If she plays any more tournaments, she'll be needing somebody to look after her at those events, but I'm sure that'll just be temporary and then maybe line up somebody for 2022. But yeah, the rumour mill just keeps going. I'm sure there are plenty of coaches throwing their hat in the ring to have a crack at that one. But I don't expect any sort of announcement anytime soon.
Someone who I'm really happy to see having a great... It started at Bad Homburg, didn't it? Angelique Kerber. I'm loving seeing the tennis she's playing, the confidence she's got and the results that she's getting. Because I think a lot of people thought after that 2016 she's a multiple Grand Slam winner, been at number one in the world, that the ranking was starting to go down. And I'm just loving to see, because when she plays at her best and the match with Leila Fernandez at the US Open was just mind-blowing, wasn't
so
it?
So good.
Fernandez sort of out Kerbering Kerber, and it was just, but to see and Angelique Kerber as we record this on Wednesday is still going. I just really like seeing Kerber playing as she's playing.
Yeah, and she goes on runs, doesn't she? Yeah. As in last time her ranking dropped all the way down into the 20s, and then from number one down to the 20s, she got it back on track and ended up winning a slam again. So she can get right back up to the very, very top, and she's amazing. I'm such a big fan of hers. I love watching her at her best because she does stuff that doesn't even really make sense. You know, she plays it quite differently, you know, whether it's the serve technique, and she sort of just starts the point with the serve, particularly the second serve. It's pretty slow and pretty slow. It doesn't really do anything, but she's such a good mover. It doesn't matter. She's like, go on then, try and hit a winner, see what happens. and then she's on the counter punch and you're in trouble. So always exciting to see her at her best. But I think also we get very excited about the youngsters breaking through, and that's great. And we love that and super to see them all there. But, you know, there needs to be some experience as well at the top of the game because they've got to, you know, earn their way. It's a rite of passage. You've got to beat these players in these big moments like Leila did against Kerber in the US Open. You know, you got to take out these Grand Slam champs and earn your way to the top. They're not just going to wander off for you. So I very much want to see her back in business.
The quote of the tournament is one that Casper Ruud used as a mantra that was handed down from his father, who was working at a tennis academy. And I love it. It's losers find excuses, winners find a way. Isn't that a great mantra to have? I know we lost today, but I love that.
It's a great mantra to have, I agree. But don't you think, I know Ruud's not a teenager anymore, but don't you think that most teenagers, if their dad said that to them, would be like, oh, come on, leave me alone.
Yes.
You might want to say that, but no one lives
like
that.
If I told that to my six-year-olds, they'd be like, okay, mum, great.
You just roll your eyes and go, whatever. Yeah, I prefer the excuses, thanks. That's just what the majority of people do. But Ruud sort of takes it and he does just find a way. But a lot of the reason he found a way in that match is because he's just done so much winning. Sort of happened. He was not the better player. There's a better way of phrasing that. Harris was the better player for the majority of that match, but didn't win.
What I didn't understand, during that run of win after win after win through the clay, those three clay court tournaments during the Tokyo Olympics, and obviously I was out in Tokyo keeping... You're in, effectively, I probably was in a bubble. And then I remember looking, as I said, oh, look, Ruud's won again. Ruud's won. And then people afterwards said, yeah, but they don't really mean anything because the draw wasn't very good. And it just, you know, they're sort of pointless wins. No, they're not. They're not pointless wins because he picked up titles. He picked up confidence. It's all led through to winning his first title on a hard court in San Diego. So I don't know why people would sit there and say, well, they're just ridiculous tournaments to enter. They don't really mean anything because there wasn't anyone of note in the tournament.
Well, they were 250s. And in 250s, you're not going to get all of the top 10 playing. That's just how it goes. Yeah. And, I mean, Rude maximised, and you know, I can sort of understand where they're coming from, but the notion that they don't mean anything is nonsense, really, because you can only play who's in front of
exactly.
you. The tournaments are on, and he did a fantastic job, but there is also the argument he's playing very well, he's in the top 10 in the world, but he's beaten one top 20 player on a hard court this year. I think he beat a few on clay, but as a top 10er, you know, you're a top 10 player, you'd be looking to beat those sorts of players quite a lot. So he's not quite done it against those top guys, apart from earlier in the year on the clay. He did really well with his semi-final run in Monte Carlo.
So where did you sit on the argument of, before Caroline Wozniacki won Australia, how could she have been number one without winning a Grand Slam? Dinara Safina, how could they be number one without Grand Slam? Are they justifiable number ones? They played an awful lot of matches, they earned the points, but there was always the argument there. Are they a deserved number one because they haven't won a Grand Slam?
Of course they are. Yeah, like, of course they're absolutely deserving it, for sure, but it's just about the different routes that you can take to get somewhere. Mm. And, you know, you do need a high volume of matches to be able to progress and to feel confident. And sometimes you can have these huge wins over Novak Djokovic or Nadal on clay and you can pick up 20 points. It's not fair, you know. So of course it's deserving whichever way it goes. And I was really pleased to see that, you know, Wozniacki got her slam, but you know, she was number one for a long time. She was player of the year, wasn't she, over and over again, because she's player of the year. That's why you get number one in the world ranking. You don't get slams, do you, for player of the year? You get number one. That's how it goes.
Oh, you're slightly scared. We are sitting at a distance. I don't think we have to be anymore, but we are socially distanced across the table. No, it's an interesting one here, and it's very much the team method, isn't it? Early on when he was playing everything. I remember when he flew across the world to get to Antalya to play on the grass because there was a tournament. And you would think that they might start to adjust the schedule next year.
Yeah, well, I was talking about this on air with Rude, and I was saying that you know, it's really difficult because with those players, if there's a tournament on, they want to play it. They want to be there. They just think, why would I be sitting at home when there's a tournament to play? This is ridiculous.
And don't you prefer playing than training?
I didn't. Well, it depends. It depends on the time. But for a lot of people, they prefer playing over training. But then I thought, why am I saying if there's a tournament? This is tennis. There is a tournament every single week of the year. There's always something that you can be playing. You don't have to miss a single week. I think Benoit Paire once got through from the very first week in January all the way through to the French Open without missing a single week of competition, because he is somebody who does not like to train. So he was like, look, I'm only actually going to play tennis if I'm playing matches.
And you could make a very good living that way.
Of course.
And I think I looked at his prize money and it's sensational.
Yeah, he plays a ridiculous amount of tournaments.
And why? Yeah, there are those players that... wasn't it just before he went out to Indian Wells, I think Cameron Norrie, who's another player having an astonishing 2021, who had a little bit of a training block. Lucy Owen Worker said she saw him at the National Tennis Centre just going through some training. He's back out there again. And he's someone else who currently on court, as we say this, he's a set up on Tommy Paul. And when I was giving the score earlier, I said Paul Norrie and it sounded like a person. So Tommy Paul, Cameron Norrie, he's a set up. But boy, Cameron Norrie, I mean, he's got the matches under his belt. He's got the results and he's having a stellar 2021.
Yeah, potential for Turin as well. And that's what we're closing in on now, looking at that chasing pack. It looks like the sort of top, I think it's six, look fairly set. Rude looks fairly comfortable.
So after the qualified four, you've got Rublev and Berrettini.
Yeah.
And you can't see them not making it.
No, exactly. And then it would sort of be ludicrous that you could win as many matches and titles as Rude and not make the final eight.
He's seventh right now.
I think he will. But really it is those seventh and eighth spots up for grabs, and there's a chasing pack. Norrie is a big part of that. He's put himself in a really good position. Again, just a high volume of match wins. Big points available in Indian Wells and in Paris, of course. So those will be the tournaments that decide it, as we've seen with Khachanov and Sock before.
But it's amazing to see how it starts to affect them. Do you remember when Pablo Carreño Busta got to the semi-finals of the US Open and suddenly London became a possibility? And he admitted afterwards that he completely froze with the prospect of making London. Couldn't hit a ball, couldn't get a win. He ended up going as an alternate and then playing with the withdrawal of Nadal. But he said it really affected him. And I'm not saying we saw that in Rude today. He's also got that quantity of matches. But it's such a big thing. You are one of the eight best players in the world with your results through the year 2021 as it is. There's a lot of points. There's 1,500 points, so one below the Grand Slam. There's a lot of money as well. I mean, there's big amounts of money. They get looked after like kings and princes at the Tour Finals. It's such a special event to be a part of. And you can see how it can start to affect players as they get closer. Now we've got this chasing pack. We've got Ruud, Hurkacz, Sinner,
Ogier Yassim,
Aslan Karatsev, and Norrie. I think that is the immediate chasing pack. And yeah, you can try and scoop up some smaller tournaments. You can do whatever it takes, but it's amazing how this carrot that for those players may not have even been on the goal list for 2021, suddenly it becomes a possibility.
Yeah, it just gets sort of tantalisingly close, yeah. Doesn't it? And the urgency to try and win is just huge. But I mean, in terms of what it means to reach that, it can't be overstated, because they get access to 1,500 points. They get match wins per, they get points per match wins in the rounds. This is all extra points that players that are outside of that top eight do not have access to. Because you can argue that for the rest of the year, everybody has access to the same amount of points. And yeah, absolutely anybody could end up with all of the points that Djokovic has got if you just go and do it, right? You've got to get into the tournaments. Of course, you've got to work your way up, so it does take a bit of time. But in terms of, you know, the top 50, for example, it's a level playing field. But you get to that top eight, you get the opportunity to pile on some big, big points on top of what you've already earned that year. And that sets you up really nicely for the following year, because those points won't drop off until the end of the year. So you've got that little bit of cushioning. You want to keep your spot in the top 10. And I tell you what, that's a way to do it. It's absolutely huge. And actually, that year of Pablo Carreño Busta, if anyone wants to know when my picks and predictions went awry, it was that year. Because before the tournament started, PCB was an alternate, as you said. Yep. And I picked him to win. I picked him come in as an alternate and win the whole thing.
And then, which he didn't, by the way.
I got halfway there. He came, because yeah, Nadal pulled out. He came in from Nadal, and I was saying, guys, this is it. He's going to win the next two matches. He's going to go through. He's going to win the whole thing. It didn't happen.
It didn't work out that way. No, but you got the fact that he played, because everyone's like, oh, that's a ridiculous prediction.
Well, they were saying he's not even in the tournament.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I mean, he will be.
No, he wasn't player of the year.
Doesn't need the first
match. But he did well. He didn't come out on top. And only, I can't speak for Turin, because none of us have been there, because it hasn't been there. But like, they also get their own dressing rooms. You know, it's very different. They've got their big picture, sort of floor to ceiling of them and their name, individual dressing rooms, the walkout. In London, you had the smoke, the music. It's like watching tennis in a nightclub. It was. We loved the music every year. We loved the music.
I love the music so much.
It's just it's very different, and it's very special. And we saw what it meant to Diego Schwartzman to be there, and Andrei Rublev was there for the first time. And it's a big occasion, and I know it's going to be slightly different. I mean, I assume Novak Djokovic will play. I mean,
I'm sure he will. But
you know, there might be an argument to say, well, I just don't want to. I'm going to take this time off and get ready for Australia. If he goes to Australia, depending on restrictions, etc., maybe he'll look at the race for number one and Medvedev closing in. I don't know, but he doesn't essentially need to play. But in the past, you've had kind of Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, Murray.
Yeah.
And it's been, I'm not saying it's not going to be as special, but it's a big, big event. And I just, yeah, I find it interesting how it affects the players as they suddenly think, I could actually do this.
Yeah, and there's always that sort of weird element to it as well. And we see this with a couple of players, especially the ones that take that eighth spot, apart from Jack Sock, who had a flyer and reached the semis. But you have an unbelievable year. You've reached the top eight. You've just nicked that last eight spot at the very last second. You've got there. Huge achievement. Everything that you were saying, the light show, the dressing room, you're treated like a king, all of that sort of stuff. And then for some players, they get absolutely thumped in every single match they play.
They do.
And they do, because you're playing against your first match is against Federer. Your second match is against Djokovic. Your third match is against Thiem. And you've barely won games. And like, it can happen, right? It's unbelievable to think that, like, and then you just feel a bit bad because that's the way they end their incredible year.
Being thumped
just sort of like dragging their feet again out of the going, that wasn't, I was so looking forward to playing and that wasn't very fun.
But then the prize money and the points,
yeah, I'm sure
just sort of settles things.
Hey there, did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And just to, so I mentioned the four that have been confirmed for Turin. The WTA finals, the four players confirmed. We touched on this last week. Barty, who is not, I can't imagine she'll be there. Sabalenka, who's recovering from COVID right now. Krejcikova, who just looks exhausted. I remember hearing from her coaching team at the US Open that she was basically on fumes. Bless you. That she was running on fumes. She was pretty much empty. And Pliskova. So they are the only four. And then you've got Świątek, Sakkari, Muguruza, Ons Jabeur at the moment. That's your eight. If they went there now, that would be your eight. So those players there thinking, well, hang on a second. What do I need to do? Someone like Ons Jabeur, who breaks record after record. She keeps going into the history books for what she's achieving. Imagine if she were to go through and take her place in the Tour. I mean, look, these are big events that mean an awful lot. So we'll keep an eye on. We're both working on the Tour finals, so we'll be able to give a little insight around that. Another of my favourite quotes today, Dmitry Tursunov. I mean, he's good with a quote. Now, he's working with Annette Kontaveit on the WTA side of things, and he did work with Aslan Karatsev back in the day. So he was asked about Aslan Karatsev. This was on the ATP website, so it was based around Karatsev. And it was, did you always know? I'm sure this is what every person who's ever coached Emma Raducanu has been asked. Did you always see something special? Did you always see the potential? And he started the answer with, well, he's always had big calves.
Well, there you go.
That was the start. And he said, okay. Then he went on to say they should probably have their own sponsor. They're so big, you could sponsor each calf. Eventually, he talked about the potential of Aslan Karatsev, but he started with the size of the man's calves.
Well, you know, it is fairly striking, I suppose, from him. I'm not really sure how much it impacts his tennis, to be honest. But yeah, it is. It's just awesome to see these breakthroughs, and that's why we love sports so much. Because, you know, you do have the stalwarts and the players that are just so experienced and do so well week in, week out. But to have these runs, that's what we love getting behind. I mean, you think about the run of Marco Cecchinato and in the French Open, and Tennis Sangrin at the Australian Open. I mean, they've been sort of all over the place. That's just the men's, of course. The women's are, you know, phenomenal. We have these runs like Emma through to winning the Slam. So, yeah, it's good fun. And for me, I feel like that's what makes sport, you know. Like, I know we have the seeding system, and people always talk about that, saying, well, we want the best players at the end of the tournament. Oh, we love an upset, that's for sure. We want some of the best players at the end of the tournament, but it's always nice when somebody else manages to break through.
Well, I think it's just been a wonderful year in terms of...
It's been fab.
In terms of the stories, and I like the way that it's spread out over both tours, and we're talking about the WTA Tour as much as we're talking about the ATP Tour, although in my case, and it's kind of largely yours, we do a lot of our work on the ATP side of things. But I love the way I'm listening to an interview with Brad Stein, who's now working with Jennifer Brady. And he was giving an interview, and Jennifer Brady said, I'd like to work with you, Brad. And he said, just to let you know, I don't know anything about the Women's Tour. I don't know anything about the players. And she went, perfect. That's absolutely perfect. I can deal with the women. You just make my game better. And I really like, and we've seen this with Jen Brady, she took herself out of a situation in Florida. She went to Germany. She overhauled everything. She gets the final in Australia. And I like that kind of thinking. Because he was like, I might not be the right person for you. Because she went, no, not a problem. I know the players. I know what they're like. I know what they do. You just work on me and I'll deal with them.
Well, it's taking responsibility herself, saying that, you know, she's now very well established at the top of the game, has lots of experience, knows a lot of the players inside out, and she's right. You know, that's her expertise. You don't really need somebody to come in who knows all the stuff that you know. You want somebody to add to your insight. It's a collaboration when you're at that level between player and coach. It's not sort of finding a coach and then looking at them and saying, okay, make me number one in the world. It just doesn't work like that. I mean, the majority has to come from you as a player, and that's just guidance that you're getting. So, yeah, it's for me, it's always much more effective when it is a proper collaboration. You feel like they're sort of sitting down, working things out on the same page, moving forward. And sometimes you do see the coaching, which is a bit more dictatorial, and we see a lot of that with juniors For sure, and I think that's a bit more natural. That I don't like it myself, but it you can understand how it's a bit more like that. But for these women, absolutely. I mean, barely anyone knows more about the women's tour than Jen Brady. Okay, she's relatively new. Okay, the more experienced players maybe do, but yeah, she's got that covered.
Talking about juniors, I've had a couple of mums come up to me. I don't know why they're asking me. I mean, I work in tennis. I don't run tennis clubs around the local area where I live. A couple of mums come up to me going, how do I get onto a tennis course? And I'm like, well, there's no room. That people are fighting to get their children. There's a club near us, and on a Saturday they do a drop and play tennis or something like that. And it's pay as you go. You do it each week. There's always spaces. It's booked up for, I want to say, the rest of the year. And
yeah.
And mothers are saying, normally I could, you know, I don't know whether to book it. I don't know whether she'll like it, but this, and it's great to see that they're picking up rackets, and maybe it'll die down. And of course, loads will drop by the wayside, and this will wear off. But yeah, a couple of mums saying, how do I get on a tennis? I'm like, I feel like such a disappointment because I don't know. I have no, you know, I can't wander in saying, oh, excuse me, can this? It's just people want to play tennis at the moment, which is fantastic. You drive past the tennis clubs, and the courts are being used. And that's the nicest thing to see, that the courts, and sometimes around the area where I live, there are empty courts. Every one of them's out there, and children are talking about it. And it just made, when you said about the juniors, that there has been this uplift in tennis. And this is exactly, and you still working heavily within tennis. I mean, I work in tennis on the media side of things, but you're more involved in it. For you now, you want to see this sort of grab taken, developed, and actually lead to something.
It's a huge moment for British tennis. Mm. It's absolutely huge. You picked up a singles Grand Slam. It's
Player
massive.
Of the year.
Not yet. Not yet. We'll see. But I think, it's amazing to see. And I see the same thing. I'll be out first thing in the morning walking dog and baby at 7 a.m., 7:30, and there's, you know, the courts are full. It's unbelievable. The park courts is what I'm talking about. It's huge. We've got big investment going on. So it's all fantastic. We normally get that spike after Wimbledon every year. So pretty much for the rest of July, maybe for a week
you
into August, about a month, the courts are rammed. Everybody wants to play tennis. They've been inspired by Wimbledon. It's one of the biggest events of the year, full stop. So, we get that little lift, but it fades pretty quickly most years. So it'll be interesting to see whether this one sticks a bit more.
So how does it stick? Is it the investment? Is it making courts accessible? If you had to, I don't know, do your 3-point plan to make the most of this boost we've had with Emma Raducanu winning, what are the three in your mind? And you'll say, look, I'm not speaking for everyone, but if you were tennis czar, what would be your top three things?
Firstly, I am tennis czar. So,
all right then, okay, what's going to happen?
Well, you know, it's difficult, really. I mean, there are different ways that you can go with it. For me, there's inspiration for people to play and to increase participation. That's one area to look at. But there's also inspiration for the people who are already playing, and for kids who are maybe county standard players and they play 2-3 times a week, they play a little bit of competition. It's inspiration for them to play more, to commit more, and to dedicate more to something they already really enjoy and have a good skill level in. So there's two ways to look at it, really. I mean, I would focus a lot on the people that we already have in the sport that are already playing it, and getting them to understand that, you know, you can have this fantastic career and the skills that you can learn, and you know, Emma being such a great role model for people in British tennis. And to do that, you need a lot more tournaments and competition, because if people want to compete, they've got to be able to get there easily, play at the right level, that sort of thing. And really look at it like that. It's very easy to only look at sort of participation numbers, and participation numbers are very important. We want people to be playing tennis, and even if they're really casual players, and that's what we see in that post Wimbledon boost. It's very much sort of casual adults that decide, oh, I fancy a game of tennis, lovely weather today, just watch Wimbledon. I can do that, whatever. And off they go and find out they can't. And then they never play again because it was really difficult. Maybe that's how it goes. I think the inspiration level is sort of different. And, you know, I'm always very much, you know, particularly somebody like Emma, who's so relatable, a role model, I'd be looking at sort of the early teen girls that we've got that are playing to sort of a county level, national level, and how can we spur them on to go, all right, well, she's done it. That means I can do it. Because a lot of people want to, they just don't really believe that they can, or they don't think that it's possible for whatever reason. And so I think that would be that's where I would focus. But you'd also have to have a team focusing on schools and everybody that is desperate to play on a court, be able to play on a court. And you know, unfortunately, we've got winter coming, and you know, indoor facilities are very limited and very expensive, so it becomes a little bit more difficult. But luckily, we had really good weather in September post US Open, so we did get a really good boost. Yeah, it's been really nice actually. Already, really nice autumnal. It's been warm enough, I think, to play, and dry enough, more importantly. So, I mean, it's complicated. It's not as straightforward as, you know, we should just have this massive boost. You look at other sports, it doesn't necessarily always work like that. You know, you have to try and make it into what you can. And as I say, I'd have sort of an approach looking at two different areas.
Do you think, or do you know, if we lost a lot of players through COVID? Because it was a time where players, I'm talking the lower rungs who were professionals, couldn't get into tournaments because in terms of ranking, everyone wanted to get into tournaments they could get into. They couldn't travel. I touched on only the cost. They were having to play £500-600 to come back and quarantine and take tests and then go out again. So do you feel we might have not lost a generation, but lost a layer of talent, a layer of players because of everything in the pandemic?
We lost a few. But I don't think we lost massive. I mean, to be honest, it is still not great for players ranked outside 200 in terms of tournaments. It's still limited in comparison to what it was before.
Yep.
People are working as hard as they can to put on these tournaments safely. They're already very expensive to do. It's a big investment for whoever's putting on the tournament, and it's now just got a lot more expensive with all of the regulations that have come in. So, it can be very, very tricky. So, you know, you do feel for the players who are in that sort of ranking bracket, and they've had to rely on more domestic events. And in the UK, they've been playing domestic events, but plenty of nations don't have a lot of domestic events. You know, we're lucky that, you know, we do have some tournaments that players can play. And actually, a lot of them were born out of the pandemic because players needed something to do, so they sort of created everything. But it's not easy for that group, and we have lost some players. Because, you know, it's tough going at the best of times, and it obviously became completely unsustainable. I don't think we lost a massive chunk, really. Because also the thing is like below 300, you're not earning any money. You're spending money when you go to tournaments. So if you stop going to tournaments, you've stopped spending money. So financially, you're actually better off,
aren't you?
Of course you are. Yeah. No. Yeah. I mean, everybody essentially, you know, but talk about the expenses. Ultimately, if you're going to a tournament, it's just like paying for a holiday, because you're paying for a hotel, you're paying for food and flights, and then what you're earning is not a lot. You know, you're going to earn a couple of hundred dollars if you do okay. I mean, I think first round of a 10K, I think it was £40 or something.
Really?
Yeah, something like that. So, you know, the majority of players week to week aren't making money. Even if you win, especially as I say, 10K, 15K level, you might break even. The players ranked 300 and lower are not making money versus their expenses in a year. And that's without coaches and all sorts going on. So to not be competing, whilst, yes, it's very difficult for everybody, they're not worse off, if you know what I mean.
Would you still like baby Fernando to be a pumpkin for Halloween?
Yes.
Okay. I was slightly sidetracked from finding the pumpkin costume because the youngest of the twins said, can I be a pumpkin for Halloween? And this is a different pumpkin outfit. And I got him one last year, and he's grown a lot. It's sort of it's like a big round, put it over your head, put your arms through it.
Look like a pumpkin?
Yeah.
Right,
but
okay.
It doesn't cover
orange,
the whole body.
Round?
It's orange round?
Orange
but
round.
But in terms of, you know, it's sort of, it's like
a pumpkin.
It's like a ball with legs and arms.
Yeah, it's a pumpkin.
Yeah,
what else would it be?
Well, just some.
Well, he's not just going to have to like sit in a ball all day.
Well, no,
he's
like,
allowed to walk.
Some people might have just dressed all in orange. I don't know. It's like a ball thing. And he said, can I be a pumpkin again? I said, oh, God. And he said, I think we've still got the pumpkin costume from last year. He's had a few growth spurts. So we tried it on, and it's like It's like a mini skirt now. So you put the pumpkin on him, and it doesn't go over his bottom. It like comes up to his midriff. So I was saying to him, maybe you shouldn't be a pumpkin because I mean it looks a bit daft. I said, what about a skeleton? He's like, oh, I don't know, a skeleton. So I bought his brother a skeleton onesie to be a skeleton, and now he wants to be a skeleton. And now the skeletons have run out. I mean, these are very minor things, but when you're dealing it with working with little sleep, these are very difficult things. So now I've got to find another skeleton because the pumpkin is a little bit embarrassing. It's a little bit short.
Yeah.
Trying to make something
fit. Good, though.
Yeah, well, I can't.
It's much easier because you just have to wear a top and trousers with a skeleton printed on it.
So it's easy until you get to the bit where you need a skeleton printed on.
You don't have to wear a ball.
No, but you've got to have a skeleton printed on it. Can't just want. I mean, there's. I was never into kind of. I don't like fancy dress. Do you like fancy dress?
No,
can't stand it. So
I don't know if I've ever done it. Really,
I don't think
maybe
I've ever
once.
So if you said to me, "I'm having a very important birthday party for whatever it is, it's fancy dress," I wouldn't be there. And no, don't look at me like that.
Would you not just come without dressing up, though?
No, because then I think that looks even worse. Because then everyone's like, "Oh, look at that! He hasn't made an effort." And so I'd make any excuse. I don't know what I'd think of something. And I can't do fancy dress. I just don't like it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's fair enough. I don't find it fun.
So my heart sinks when they say there's this birthday for whatever. And you're like, it's the theme is. And you're like, no, there's no theme.
For kids, it's fun, though.
No, for kids, it's fun. But what I'm saying is, therefore, when Halloween comes around, they're like completely going bonkers with Halloween and wanting to dress up and do all these things. And I'm like, Mummy, are you dressing up? And I was like, just going to wear black trousers and a black jumper or
just
something.
Just put on a hat, a witch's hat. And be like,
oh, okay. I could just do that. So I'm in the midst of working Indian Wells hours, trying to bring together some Halloween costumes because they are so excited. And normally I would have been to the US Open. Normally we covered it remotely.
Yeah.
And in America, Halloween is... It's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's a lot bigger than it
is. It's enormous. Yeah. So when I go out for the US Open, despite the time of year, you go into the shops and there's so much Halloween stuff. There is incredible Halloween stuff.
Yeah.
From sweets to accessories to costumes. So I've normally kind of done that every year. So I've had to...
Oh, is it going to be a disappointment this year?
Yeah, a little bit. I'm having to... I'm not going to make anything. I haven't resorted to that. But it's just... It's putting pieces together. But I have got rid of the pumpkin. Just looks silly. I was trying to tell him. He's like, does it look good? I was like, you don't want to, you know, crush him. I was like, well, maybe we could.
But he doesn't.
Yeah. Maybe we could go down another road. So that pumpkin's got... That's too big for your child, though.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Swamp him. I don't think he'd have arms.
Well, I just put him in the pumpkin. Yeah, and you just could. Get lost in
just,
there.
Yeah, you just
sit in there for a while.
Yeah, and say he's like the lantern. He could hold like a little candle.
Yeah.
And he could be... That'd be amazing.
Sweet.
So I am on the hunt for your pumpkin. For Halloween.
Cool.
I know I'm running out of time.
Can't wait.
Just give me a little bit of sleep and you'll have your pumpkin.
Can't wait.
Right. And player of the year is
Ash Barty.